So this is August 15th, 2007, Indian Independence Day. Is it right? What do you call it? Republic Day or something? What do you call it? Independence Day. This is the day that India became independent of the...
60 years back.
60 years ago, India became independent from imperial rule of Great Britain. It became an independent nation. Jai Hind. Jai Ma Mother Bharat, Bharat Mata. So in this section, the second canto, chapter 10 is talking about the creation. It's a very detailed explanation about creation. Canto, second canto, chapter 10. And it's just explaining how Mahavishnu and everyone is meant to serve the Lord. Everyone's connected to the Lord. Everything is created by the Lord, controlled by the Lord. So I was thinking there's some nice purports here to discuss about so-called independence. The independence of India is one thing. But what is that independence? Are we as living entities, are we actually independent? Or are we dependent? Oftentimes our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he would say that India was better off. India, that was his viewpoint. India was better off when the British were ruling. You know, the Muslims and Hindus cooperated together. There wasn't any riots during the actual British rule. And the Muslims used to go to the temple on Janmashtami, and he probably even explains his Muslim friends would come to his house. It was quite a friendly relationship, the Hindus and Muslims. But now with the degradation of the age of Kali and this independence, the politicians, everything is democratic government. So all the politicians are trying to appease the minorities and get their votes, the Muslims and the scheduled class. And so it creates so much animosity because there's party spirit and personal ambition of the politicians. So they don't care anything for the sanctity or peace of the people. They just care about their own pocketbooks. But at any rate, in this discussion of creation, the main point is to understand that the creation is personal. There's a person behind creation. Wherever you see an effect, there must be a cause. And so if you see a very intelligent effect, there must be an intelligent cause. If you see the working, if you see a computer, you can't think, oh, it came to being, it came into being by chance. Someone just threw up a bunch of pieces in the air and they all fell together and became a Sony computer. So some people try to say that creation by chance theory, or it's all chemicals, chemical evolution. You take a big bowl and put a bunch of chemicals in it and put it on a high-speed blender and you get the material world. It's so absurd. Everywhere where we see some organization or some intelligence, we see some organization, some design, some organization, some symmetry, some complex functions. There's always intelligence behind it. Intelligence implies consciousness. Insentient things don't have consciousness. Matter doesn't have consciousness. Sulfur, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, there's no consciousness there. There's no intelligence there. Those are elements, the panchabhuta. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. So behind all this gross matter is actually a person, the Supreme Consciousness, the Absolute Truth, God, and he's fantastically intelligent. So in this section, Shukadev Goswami is explaining how the Absolute Truth is clearly a person. And one should know that all the material ingredients, the activities, the time factor, this means pradan, karma, kala, the modes of nature, gunas, as well as the jivas, the living entities, who try to enjoy matter, exist only by his mercy. Because it's describing here how Mahavishnu exhales and everything is created and manifested. Then he inhales and everything is annihilated. Not annihilated, you can say unmanifest. You can't see it. It may be some annihilation, but everything is within his body. Just like you're dreaming something, and you may be dreaming you're making something. So it's unmanifest. No one can see it. But in your dream, you're thinking, oh, I bought this cloth and I made this salwar kameez myself. I designed it and I took it to the dress shop and I was arguing with the guy because it didn't fit properly. And he said, it's nice. And I said, no, it's not nice. And then, so then I woke up. Oh, that's what I have to do today. I already dreamed about it. So it was unmanifest, and then you go and manifest it. So either way, it was manifest and becomes unmanifest. So the creation is within the Mahavishnu. Everything is there, all the elements, all the jivas. Then he has a desire, and he manifests the creation due to the desire of the living entities. Then he manifests it, then he withdraws. So all the elements, they change their presentation, but even the law of physics, the modern physics, they say the conservation of energy. The scientists say there may be transformation. One element may transform into another, but there's no loss of the elements. Like you have clay, it's in the earth, mitti, and you combine, you shape it into a bowl, and then you put it in the fire, and then you make a, you fire that clay and it becomes hard, and use it as a bowl, eating bowl. And then you're done with it, you break it, and you throw it in the ground and break it. So the same clay is there. It's going through transformations. It manifests a shape, then it returns. So-called conservation of energy. Everyone who studies science. The elements are recombining. Water becomes gas. Gas becomes water. But all the elements are basically there, intact. But they change their forms. So the point Shukadeva Goswami is making is behind everything depends on, everything is dependent. The time factor is dependent on Vishnu. The material ingredients of Pradhan, the Mahatattva, all the ingredients of creation, they're dependent on Vishnu. The living entities are dependent on Vishnu. Prakriti, and activities, karma, it's all depending on Vishnu. It's all hanging on him. Matatparataram nanyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. Mayi sarvamidam proktam sutri mani gananiva. It's just like a spider. The web is contained within the spider. And then he sticks a piece of it on the ceiling, then he drops down. And the web comes out of his backside. And then he spins a whole spider web. But when he wants, he can take all the spider web back inside himself. It's like you have a bunch of rope and you throw it out. Like the spider here, he dropped in on his book. So from his body, he expands this web. And he makes this whole thing, and then he lives, moves around that web and catches insects. And then when he wants to, he can draw it back. You ever see, sometimes he hangs down from the ceiling, then you go like that, and he goes, he pulls it back in his body. You'll see. He's just hanging by a piece of this gossamer from his body. And then if you poke him, he'll go, ooh, and just put it all the way back like a yo-yo. It's like a spider yo-yo. It just comes back into himself. And oh, where'd it go? So that's like creation. Here it is. Now you see it. Now you don't. So this is, as soon as Vishnu withdraws his care, everything ceases to exist. Everything depends on him. This is the theme of the, today actually is, we're celebrating our independence, but it's a good day to realize our dependence. We're not dependent on India, we're not dependent on the politicians, we're not dependent on Britain, but we're dependent on God. This is the real. This we can never be independent of God. As soon as God, we might say, "Oh, I want to live. I have an independent choice. I want to live 5 minutes more." Time is up. It's up. With all the money in the world, you can't buy the 5 minutes. Walt Disney had billions of dollars, and he wanted to live longer. And they said, "No, you're up. You're finished. You're going." He said, "Anyway, freeze my body. And if you find a cure for my disease, you can thaw me out and try to keep me going." He has a whole. Somewhere a frozen body somewhere. Elaborate arrangement. Keep him frozen. So, but actually everything depends on God. Just like this body, for example. This body is a small manifestation. It's a small creation. We're in this body as the supreme soul of this body. And there's millions of other souls. So many bacteria, germs, worms. They're all souls. But they're, you can say, like citizens. And I'm the prime minister. I'm the main person in this body. And they're just going along for the ride. The worms, the bugs, the germs. They're also atmas. And they're very tiny, but they're all over my body, millions of them. But if I, just like the prime minister, if he acts crazy and throws the country into war, the whole country suffers. They may even get blown up. Like if he declares war against America, and America drops a bunch of A-bombs in India, everybody dies. Not that we can't throw a few at them also. But 1 billion people can be exterminated. If the one goes crazy, then they're all finished. So that one is the prime minister. So the one soul of this body, of the nation of this body, is called the Atma. That's me. And then all the other ones are depending on me. If I shoot myself, then they're finished. Of course, they live for some time on the body itself, but then they'll be finished also. So we're interdependent. But the real key, the key word is dependence. At every step of the game, at every step of life, we're dependent. We're dependent on the Lord. Everything depends on Him. Thus, Mahavishnu, while lying on his bed of mystic slumber, you know, when he withdraws everything, through his external energy, out of his desire to manifest varieties of living entities from himself, then when it's creation, he has a desire to manifest, then the creation begins. So Prabhupada explains in his purport to text 16, he says, no one has independent existence, just as no electric lamp has independent effulgence. You might, like this lamp is giving effulgence, but it's drawing its power from somewhere else, not from itself. It's displaying the power, but the power is not his own. So we're displaying power, we're displaying creativity, the power to create life or to generate something or make something or build something. But it's not actually our power. The power is coming from God. Every electrical instrument depends fully on the total powerhouse, and the total powerhouse depends on the reservoir of water for generating electricity. That's in terms of hydro, what do you call it?
Hydroelectric.
Yeah, hydroelectric. Because we have atomic generators also. And water depends on the clouds, and clouds depend on the sun. The sun depends on creation, and creation depends on the movement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes. So in this line of thinking or presentation, logic, Prabhupada is trying to turn on our thinking process so that we can trace out the center of everything, the origin of everything, the Adi Purush, the original enjoyer. That by using logic, like someone says, oh, this is, I built this house, this is my house. Acha, what did you make this house with? Oh, I made this house with cement and bricks and steel. So what is steel made of? Oh, iron ore and bricks and it's clay. And so where does that come from? Where do the elements come? Oh, they came from the earth. Did you create the earth? Well, no. So you're the independent creator? Well, you combine, all you did is combine the elements. And then where did the steel come from? Oh, I built this house of steel. Where did it come from? It came from the shop, from the dukan, iron dukan. And then where did he get it? He got it from the manufacturer. Where he got it? He got it from the iron, from the earth, from iron ore. And then they produce, they combine these elements and they make steel in some process, some intelligent process. But where did the iron ore come from? Oh, what do you mean? It just comes from the earth. No, but everything has a source. Well, someone must have created it. Well, then that someone is God. So the buck stops there, as they say. If you go back farther, like someone says, who created you? Oh, my mother and father. Who created them? And you go back to the origin, the original creator, Adi Karta, the original doer. So this is, the Prabhupada's taking a nice thing. Oh, this power. So this is showing the dependence of the living entity. There's more. From Vishnu's energies and by his will, the universal form gradually develops. It's called Virat Purush, universal form. Just as a child develops in the womb, first the Virat Rupa's sense energy, mental force, and bodily strength are generated. These dictate the living entity's movements, just as a king's movements lead his citizens. Next, because the Virata Purush, or universal form, possesses living force, he develops hunger and thirst and opens his mouth. Then one after another, the palate, the eye, ears, eyes, nostrils, legs, hands, skin, genital, anus, navel, mind, abdomen, intestines, life, breath, blood, fat, marrow, and bone are generated. So he's saying that this is all discussed in this chapter about creation. First there was the tongue, and then there came the sense of taste, and then there came water, then rasa, then all these things. The whole idea is from consciousness comes matter. And this is described in Bhagavatam. From the supreme conscious entity, matter is manifested. Because matter is a less involved energy than consciousness. Like a living being is much more complex than a stone, or a piece of sulfur, or a piece of calcium, or a piece of nitrogen. You could say there's some consciousness even in matter, but it's very much suppressed and very simplistic. And science does studies sometimes, because they used to think that the smallest unit of life was the molecule. And then they said, no, then there's the atom, and they get smaller and smaller. So life is actually, the living symptoms are the expression of consciousness, of the conscious being, of the Atma. So even the consciousness, because ultimately God, Krishna consciousness, or Vishnu, his consciousness is pervading everything, because everything is connected to him. So even an atom, which we call dead matter, earth, water, air, fire, there's some consciousness there, because it's the original consciousness is God, and he's created it. This is a little subtle point, but that lower, like sometimes it, Darwin and these other people, they try to say fossils create life, or life comes from fossils. They have the fossil, what they call a fossil record, a bunch of bones. Yeah, they have, this archaeologist, they have the fossil record, and they try to show that there was just a very primordial form of life, and then a more evolved thing happened. Spiders on your side. But this it doesn't make sense that it doesn't actually make sense that a less complex unit can make a more complex unit. What makes sense is a very, very, very intelligent and complex unit can make a less complex unit, a simple unit. And we have that experience ourselves. We're intelligent beings, and we've created so many things. But the intelligence and the creator of the object or the invention is much more than the invention and much more than the object. Man creates a computer or a cell phone, but the cell phone is not more than him. And so it doesn't even make sense. So our Vedanta's concept of creation is that the most complex living entity, the most complex, most evolved, most intelligent being, the absolute being, the absolute person, God, everything begins there. And then the first created being he makes is in terms of human life, you could say, is Brahma. Yad Adikavye. Adikavye means the original intelligent person. He had four heads, he was really smart. It's not that the first being that God or Vishnu created was a paramecium or an amoeba. It's not like that. So the Vedanta is that from consciousness, from the most advanced consciousness, and subsequent things are all created out of the consciousness. The field of creation, the background of creation, is the supreme consciousness or the Godhead. So then this same chapter discusses that now ultimately everything depends on the Supreme Lord, and he alone is independent. Although the living entities think themselves independent, this is the trick. And we want freedom, we want women's liberation and men's liberation and all kinds of liberation, and liberation for the Chamars and the Harijans and all these different movements they've tried to have to get so-called independence. The only independent living entity, the only Swatantra, if you look in the Hindi calendar, it says Swatantra Divas. Swatantra Divas, the day, I guess, Divas means the day they got independence. Swatantra. But this term is only actually applies to God. When you study Vedanta, you'll see Abhigyaswarat. Abhigyaswarat is the first verse of Bhagavatam. It says the God is Abhigya, he's all-knowing. And Swarat, he is totally independent. Swatantra, Swarat. Everyone's dependent on him. Nityo Nityananam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yo Vidadati Kaman. This is from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Nityo Nityananam Chaitanas Chaitananam. Among all the eternals, Nityo Nityananam, there's one supreme eternal. And among all the conscious beings, Chaitanas Chaitananam, there's one supremely conscious being. Eko Bahunam Yo Vidadapi Kaman. And that Eko, that one person, has been supplying and fulfilling the desires of the many. Eko bahunam yo vidadati, vidadati kaman. Kaman means lust or desire or hankering. Vidadati means fulfilling or satisfying. So we have some desire, and if it's our destiny and it's our karma, then the super soul arranges. Super soul manipulates the time factor and prakriti and the karma and different actions so that desire gets fulfilled. And this is going on all the time. But the living entity thinks himself independent, but he's not. His ability to see is dependent on the universal form's vision. Yet Krishna allows each living entity the choice to use his senses either for his own pleasure or Krishna's service. So this is, you can say, our independence. We're dependent on the Lord for everything, for our breath, for our water, for our life, for our food, for our clothing, everything. We're dependent on God. The scientists they don't make air. They don't make water. They don't make food. They don't make cloth, cotton. Everything is coming from the Lord. Even synthetics, which they claim that they're making, nylons, rayons, dacrons, it's all coming from oil. And oil is coming from where? From the earth. And so it means it's from God. Cotton and wool are all coming from the earth, from animals or from the earth itself. They say, oh, look, we've created nylon and dacron and stay press this and all these things, which are all uncomfortable and unhealthy things, actually. If you wear these fibers on your body, it's very unhealthy. The static electricity that it creates static electricity field around the body, which is very unhealthy. Nylon, dacron, stay press this and stay press that. You know, they have these things. And usually what people like the most is something that's actually a blend of natural and synthetic. Because you get something of the good virtue of natural fibers, like cotton blended with dacron, or they do all these different things. But they can't match the pure fibers. They have a phrase in English, often duplicated but never imitated. Often imitated but never duplicated. So the scientists, in a lot of ways, they do good things, no doubt. But in this regard, ultimately the point is that whatever they do, the elements they're working with are given by God. So he's behind everything. The ultimate doer, the cause of all their creations or their inventions, is God himself. So they're dependent. If God didn't give uranium, then what would they do with their atomic energy? If he took all the plutonium and uranium, then where's your atomic energy? All your so-called atomic ships and airplanes and spaceships and nuclear and electric generating stations, they're all closed. They're finished. So that means we're dependent. We're dependent on the supply of uranium. We're dependent on the supply of plutonium or cesium-137 or whatever they have. It all comes from the earth, here, there, from China, from Hong Kong, from everywhere. They're raping the entire Earth planet to find all these elements. It's like taking a loan. You can only take a loan for so long till you have to pay it back. If you don't pay it back, they can send the police after you. If you borrow for money from the mafia, you may get a goalie. Hey, you borrowed 5 crores and you didn't pay back. They do like this. So we're taking a loan from nature. We're just ripping off all the trees, ripping off all the oil, just sucking all the oil out of the earth. So there'll be reaction. So we're taking a big loan, and the scientists are giving us so many inventions, but we'll have to pay back the loan. We'll have to suffer. And you see, it's coming in the form of so much cancer. Everywhere people are getting cancers because of all the radiation that's been generated by modern science. All the radiation. Cancer is caused by radiation. And it never had, this disease is hardly anywhere in the old days. 100 years ago, 200 years ago. You can see there's a direct parallel. With the increase of atomic reactors and use of atomic energy, there's a proportionate increase in cancer all around the world. The whole atmosphere is full of nuclear waste. They had these big, spent rods, spent rods from electric companies, from these atomic reactors. They just go out in the ocean, throw them in the ocean, some steel can. And 10 years later, steel can rusts and opens up, and all the atomic energy goes into the fish. And when anybody eats fish, they've done studies, they catch a fish and they analyze it. There's like such high, high amounts of radiation inside the flesh of a fish. They drink that atomic water in the oceans. It's all facts. It's all suppressed information. So the scientists themselves are causing all this cancer because of this. So this is the way we're getting the reaction from nature. We're not following the laws of nature, the laws of God, and performing proper yajna to balance everything and utilize everything properly according to the Lord's plan. We're being independent of the Lord and independent of the Shastra, and we're getting reaction. Nature's rebelling. So many hurricanes and tornadoes, and this atomic thing is really a big, big one. So the idea is that the living entity cannot do anything independently. He can simply think of doing something independently, but he cannot actually act independently. This independence in thinking is there by the grace of the Lord. Even the Lord gives us the ability to think think independently. But the thinking can be given shape by the grace of the Lord. And therefore the common saying is that man proposes and God disposes. So we have this independent thing. Yes, I would like to do this and I'd like to do that. Now, if you have this liking or this desire to do this, this independent choice or independent desire that arises in you, that you want to do this. If you want to give shape to that desire or fulfill that desire, then immediately you have to submit. You have to become dependent. You have to depend on your body. You have to depend on the strength of your body and the power of your memory or the power of your ability to earn money, to collect money, to save money, to purchase that item that you desire to have. So, in so many ways we become dependent. We're always dependent, but this what happens is because we have this independent spirit, then we can think of ourselves that we're independent. So the whole explanation is on the subject of the absolute dependence of the living entities and the absolute independence of the Supreme Lord. So this is in the purport of chapter 10, verse 20 in the second canto. Prabhupada's telling that this is the whole idea of Vaishnavism or God consciousness, is that we declare our dependence on God. Remember in 1976, they were celebrating the bicentennial of independence of America from Britain. In 1776, America became independent of Great Britain. And you became independent in 1947. So it was 200 years of independence. So it was a big celebration. It's called bicentennial. And they had a magazine, Back to God magazine, they were distributing in July because there was national festivities everywhere. So the magazine, on the cover, said, "Declaring Our Dependence on God." That was the theme of the magazine, which we were selling that quite a bit. And it was like red, white, and blue cover, and like American style, red, white, and blue color theme. So this is the real point, is that a devotee, an intelligent person, will realize how much he's dependent on God, and then he'll submit to God, he'll surrender to the Lord and work cooperatively. That the absolute independent personality is God. So the Prabhupada goes on in text 24. "In every item we can note with profit that the sense organs of the living entity are never independent at any stage." Sense organs means our eyes, our ears, our nose. Like if we want to see, we say, yes, I want to see, but our vision is dependent. It's dependent on the function of our muscles, the eye muscles, and the proper functioning of the cornea and all the different mechanisms of the eye. But moreover, it's also dependent on light. If there's no light, even if you have all the parts of the eye, you can't see. You say, "Oh, I can't see." "What do you mean?" "Oh, it's too dark." Well, that means that you're not independent. Your seeing power is not independent. It depends on some environmental factors. It depends on something outside of yourself. that you're not in control of the seeing power, that you're dependent. You're depending on, or maybe if you get cataracts or glaucoma, you have desire to see, but your eyes are covered with this infection, so you can't see. So there's something blocking your vision. So he's saying that the sense organs of the living entity are never independent at any stage. The Lord of the senses, Krishna is known as Rishikesh. Rishika means senses. Isha means controller. The sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, touch, of the living entities are manifested by the will of the Lord, and each organ is controlled by a certain type of demigod. That's all described in this chapter, how the Lord manifested the different organs, then he manifested the objects, the senses, and then the objects of the senses, and then he manifested he expanded himself to be controllers. Like the prime minister, he takes office, then he expands himself. Oh, I have to have a minister of it. We have an electric department. Oh, then we need someone in charge of that. Okay, you're the minister of electricity. Oh, we have a transportation department. He manifests his transportation. Oh, you're in charge of that. So in the same way, the Lord manifests the tongue, and then he manifests the object of the tongue, which is taste. And then he manifests rasa. Then he manifests the demigod in control of taste, varuna. So all these demigods are, you can say, appointed, delegated ministers of the prime minister of Vishnu. So they're controlling. Because sometimes we get some, and our eye is blinking all the time because there's something wrong with the nerve. So we want, I want my eye to stop blinking, but it won't stop blinking because it's some defect. So we're not in control. Or like we're in Bhagavatam class, we like to keep our eyes open. But it's early morning and we got up early to go to Mangalartik and we feel tired. And our eyelids, there's a demigod controlling the eyelids. And he's saying, no, you go down now. So the demigod in control of the eyelids. They say there's 33 primal demigods and they have 1 crore expansions. There's 33 million demigods. But actually they're all expansions of the 33. So this the demigod in charge of the eyes, he's saying, no, you're tired now, you put those eyelids down. So your independent will is, oh, I have to keep my eyelids open. Like you're driving a car and you're very tired. And your eyes are, demigod saying, no, down, put those eyelids down. You say, no, I can't, I'll crash the car, I have to stay away. So then you take an independent choice to drink some coffee or something. I mean, the karmis, at least they do that. You try to stay awake. So no one, therefore, can claim any proprietorship of the senses. The living entity is controlled by the senses. The senses are controlled by the demigods. And the demigods are servants of the Supreme Lord. That is the arrangement in the system of creation. The whole thing is controlled ultimately by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, there is no independence either of the material nature or the living entity. This is a Bhagavatam statement about independence. So, this is a point for philosophical consideration. When one becomes a Muni or becomes thoughtful about his existence, about his life, am I independent, am I dependent? And then he may come to this realization, I'm controlled at every step of the way. I'm so dependent. And then he'll think, well, who's independent? And who's the controller? Who's controlling everything? And who's actually independent? Is anybody independent? Is anybody controlling? So they're... In the 11th canto of Bhagavatam also is explaining how the living entity is eternally dependent. Living entity is eternally dependent on the Supreme Lord. This is 11th canto. This is chapter 2, verse 37. Vayam dvitiya yabhiniveshita syad ishad abhitasya viparyayo smriti tanmaya yato buddha abhijet tam Bhaktiyai kayesham gurudeva tatma. This is it describing, this is Nimi meets the nine yogendras. Fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. When a living entity turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency of illusion called Maya. An intelligent person should engage unflinchingly, means steadily without hesitation, in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and as his very life and soul. Bhaktyai kayesham gurudeva tatma. The gurudeva, gurudeva is the atma, he's the dev atma, he's the lord of my soul. He's the lord, deva means lord or god, and atma means soul. So this is an intelligent decision. In the purport here they mention about this independence. Because generally people, they identify with their body. And the common man, most everyone thinks, I am the doer. I did it. I went to school. I worked hard. I got good grades. I got a degree. I received some qualification. And I applied for a job. I got a job. I got paid good wages. And with that money, I saved my money and I built this factory. I built this house. I purchased this car. I did it. I did it all. There's nobody besides me. Because they're in complete ignorance of the interplay or interdependence of the various devatas and demigods that are situated in his own body and the different elements of the world. And it's complete ignorance of the actual fact that so much gratitude and so much help we received all along the way to our success. Who gave us the memory? Who gave us the intelligence? Who gave us the ability? Who gave us the energy? Who gave us the strength? Who digested our food? Who cured our diseases? Who preserved our health? That we can't see due to ignorance. But when one wakes up with higher knowledge and he understands how he's receiving so many gifts from God and blessings from God at every step of his life, and how he's so dependent, he starts to realize how dependent he is. So usually living entity falsely identifies with his body. This is my body, I'm Punjabi. This is my family, my society. But this is not very intelligent. This is a limited idea of our identity. It's a false idea. And there's a verse that Krishna explains in Gita 7:14 how no one can escape this world unless they surrender to God. This illusion, this false identity, this misconception, this plane of misconception, this realm or abode of ignorance. Krishna says it's like impossible. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratiya mam evaye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. That this divine energy, daivyesha gunamayi, this is gunamayi, the divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of nature is very difficult to overcome. Mama maya duratya. He says, my maya, this is God's maya. Like a prison house, like a good prison, it's very difficult to get out. There's barbed wire, electric wire, dogs, moats, machine guns, patrols. They can't get out. Even if you dig a hole in the ground, there's some landmines. But to speak of the material world, it's much more difficult than some prison. But it's very difficult to overcome. Duratyaya. Mam eva ye prapadyante. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Mayam etam taranti te. Taranti means go cross beyond it. So the living entity, we're called jiva. And we're a particular tattva, particular truth of the Lord. Prema tattva, radha tattva, srishti tattva, pralaya tattva. So that the living entity is called, he's jiva tattva. He's the truth. He's one, we say absolute truth. God is the absolute truth. He's the complete truth. Om Purnamidam Purnamidam Purnam Udachyate. So he's the absolute truth, which means he's made of so many other truths. So many other truths combined together to make the absolute truth. And he's all inclusive. He includes all other truths. And just so we have this Nam Tattva and Jiva Tattva and Shristi Tattva and Radha Tattva, Dham Tattva. These are all truths, but they're all contained within the absolute truth. They're all part and parcel of Krishna. So this is purport is saying that the Jiva Tattva is one of the potencies or energies of the Lord. We say Shakti, Jiva Shakti. But his constitutional position is Tatastha. Tata means border. Like we say, Jumuna Tire means, Tire means border. Marginal. Being very, very small, every living entity is eternally dependent upon the supreme living entity, Krishna. Among all the eternally conscious beings, there is one supreme eternal living being who is supplying the needs of all the innumerable others. That's actually from, I said it was from Shweta Shvatara, it's from Katha. Katha Upanishad. Nityo Nityananam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam Yovadadatikam. Because you see that there, that one living entity, that one supremely conscious living entity, is supplying all the wants and needs of all the other conscious living entities. Because every conscious living entity needs to exist. Survival is the first law of nature. So everyone needs to exist. So to exist we need water, we need food, light, air. So all these are coming outside of ourselves. These are being supplied by a supplying agent. And that agent, that supplier, that supreme supplier is God, the Absolute. He is fulfilling everyone's desires. Our basic desire, the primordial desire of every living being is to exist, continue to exist. Existence. We don't want to be annihilated. To maintain our existence. They say that preservation is the first law of nature, self-preservation. No one wants to die. We want to continue to exist. But that very existence is dependent. Without the Lord's sanction, without His will, without His grace, without His mercy, we're finished. And Krishnadas Kaviraj says a similar point, Adi Leela 5.142. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasabhavritya. Krishna is the only independent controller. Ekale Ishvara Krishna. And everyone else, Arasabhavritya. Everyone else, all of the living entities are dependent upon Him. Prabhupada always uses this analogy. They're like the finger. The finger is part and parcel of the body, and it must always be engaged in a bodily service. Like this finger might say, he starts a revolutionary movement. This finger starts a non-cooperation movement. And he starts going to the other fingers and saying, listen, thumb, he's a Mr. Index, Mahatma Index. His name is Mahatma Index. And then he starts preaching. He starts traveling from the towns and villages. He starts preaching to the thumb and to the middle finger, ring finger, pinky finger. He says, listen, you should join my movement. I've started a non-cooperation movement. We should not cooperate with the mouth and with the body. We should have an independent nation. We'll call it Hatloka, like Hatras. Loka means planet and Hat means hand. In this Sanskrit, so maybe Hindi also. So we'll call it Hatloka, and we'll all live together. Us fingers will live together, and we won't cooperate with the body. And so they say, okay, sounds good. Independence, we should be independent. All for so many years we had to cooperate with the body and pick up this apple and pick up this pakora and pick up this sandesh and pick up this chapati and then always put it in the mouth. And We just had to be dependent all the time, but now we can be. Now your idea of non-cooperation is very good. Independent nation, free the hand, free the fingers. They should live freely, have independence from this dictatorial rule. The body, is not treating us right. So then this movement starts, non-cooperation. Now how long do you think it'll last? Because of the hand. If the hand doesn't cooperate with the body and declares independence and doesn't put any more food in the mouth, then what happens to the body? It becomes very weak. And what happens to the hand? also becomes very weak. And then all the fingers start, they start complaining to Mahatma Index, hey, you know, we joined your non-cooperation movement, we're not getting any food. If we're in your movement, then we have to live, we need some food. Oh yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, we are, we're dependent actually. You know, actually you and I'm feeling weak also. We're actually dependent. I don't think this movement is going to work. We're actually dependent on the body. And if we have to give food to the body, we put the food in the mouth is the enjoyer. The mouth enjoys the food. Then the mouth takes the food to the stomach and the stomach distributes it to all the parts and parcels. That means us. It means Mahatma Index, then ring finger and middle finger, and we all get nourished and then we feel good and feel happy and we can do things and have power to act and fulfill our desires. So in the same way, the living entity is like a little finger. We're part and parcel of God. Mamayavamsha jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana manashastani indrani prakriti stani karshati. This is in Bhagavad Gita. So we have to cooperate. We have to realize we're dependent on God. And we should cooperate with the center. If we declare our dependence on God and cooperate with Him, and then work for His pleasure and offer everything to Him, bring everything to Him, like the hand brings everything to the mouth, and the hand offers everything to the mouth. The mouth is not selfish. The mouth is very cooperative. The mouth is very gracious and kind. So Krishna is the same way. He's the center. He's very cooperative with the jivas. He's very gracious and kind and loving. He's bhaktivatsalya. He's very affectionate towards his devotees. So he doesn't hog everything for himself. He doesn't keep everything for himself. He distributes the nectar, distributes the energy, the food, the power, the sustenance back to us. But this is a natural arrangement. Because we're tiny, so if you're very small and weak, then naturally you'll be looking for some protection or some bigger force, some more powerful agent to protect you. Just like the children, they're playing in the yard and they're so proud and they're pushing one another off the bicycle and then, oh, you this, I'm a big this and that. And as soon as some danger comes, they immediately run to the father, oh, daddy! when the danger comes and something bigger than them comes, some big animal comes or they're playing and some big dog runs in the backyard and there's only a little 3-year-old kid. He thinks he's so big and he's pushing his little brother around. But as soon as some big dog comes, ow, 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 then the little child runs, daddy, daddy, daddy. And he holds on to the daddy. Daddy, this big dog is coming after me. Oh, okay, don't worry. You know. Hey, hut, hut. So everyone's parading around the material world acting like a big stuff. But then when disease comes or a setback comes, oh God, please help me. Oh God, please save me. Then we realize how dependent we are. But actually at every moment, the devotee realizes at every moment he's dependent. This is Sharanagati. This is the basis of surrender, this realization. So as the finger is part and parcel of the body, therefore must always engage in a bodily service, we are parts and parcels of Krishna. And we have the eternal duty of engaging in the unalloyed service of the Lord. So this is one point that's mentioned here in the Bhagavatam. How the living entity is eternally dependent on the Lord. And another point that's mentioned, how the living entities are eternally bound to the Supreme Lord in one of two ways. So, like you can be bound up to your husband or wife, or you can be bound up by the dacoit, right? The wife may wrap you in her arms and embrace you lovingly, or the dacoit may tie you up with the ropes and gag you. So in both cases you're bound. One is the dacoit has bound you with ropes and maybe very uncomfortable ropes and very tightly bound you and then gagged your mouth with a handkerchief so you can't breathe or speak. And then your wife may also bind you very tightly in her arms in a loving embrace. But in both cases you're bound, but the effect and experience is much different. So this is in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, 10th chapter, it's describing the nature of fruitive activity. This is verse 33. Yavad asya svatantratvam. This is asyas asya svatantratvam. Recognize that word, svatantra? Yavad asya svatantratam. Tavad ishvarato bayam. Yat etat samapasirams te muyanti shucharpita. Now we're explaining, this verse and purport explain how the living entity is eternally bound to the Supreme Lord in one of two ways. You can be bound as a lover or be bound as a dacoit. A lover jiva or a dacoit jiva. Either way, you'll be bound to the Lord. So the translation of 11.10.33, the conditioned soul who remains dependent on fruitive activities under the material modes of nature will continue to fear me, this is Krishna speaking, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, since I impose the results of one's fruitive activities. Those who accept the material concept of life, taking the variegatedness of the modes of nature to be factual, devote themselves to material enjoyment and are therefore always absorbed in lamentation and grief. Purport. The living entity is bound in the network of illusion, in other words, bound by Maya or by the dacoit. But although he can understand to some extent that he is dependent upon superior powers, he does not want to serve the Lord. He thus becomes filled with fear of life itself. Desiring to enjoy his material senses, the living entity, like the demon Kamsa, always fears destruction of his material arrangement. Remaining addicted to the flavors of material nature, one gradually sinks down into an irrational form of life. When one is covered by Maya, one loses all power of discrimination, and Maya then throws such a fool into the darkness of ignorance. When one wrongly considers oneself to be independent of God or Krishna, one becomes a worshipper of temporary material objects, hoping to enjoy material sense gratification. And as one grows older, one's life becomes filled with fear and anxiety. Like when you're young, you're fearless and hopeful. Some of the characteristics of youth is you're fearless and hopeful. I can do anything. I can accomplish anything. And then when you get old, it's just the opposite. You become fearful and full of anxiety because you start to realize how imperfect we really are and how weak we are. After a whole lifetime, you realize how little we could accomplish to fulfill our unlimited desires. We wanted this and we wanted one thing, we got another thing. When we're young, we think we can get anything and do anything. Then as we pass 50 or 60 years and we realize, I had all these dreams. I had all these schemes, all these plans. I was going to do this and that. I was going to create this and create that. Actually, I couldn't do anything. I did just became a normal, everyday person. I didn't do anything that I thought. I had all these grandiose plans, but I ended up being Mr. Normal. A conditioned soul considers himself to be in control of his life. Even they have these courses. Take control of your life. Think rich. Think big and grow rich or something like that. Think and grow rich. Power of positive thinking. I gave one class on the power of negative thinking. I don't know if you were here. I was describing. And you'll hear it on one of the tapes. I said that karmis, they're very much after the power of positive thinking, but devotees are after the power of negative thinking. Thinking we're fallen and dependent, but the karmis think they're very proud and independent. So we have the power of negative negative thinking. It's a very interesting discussion. So a conditioned soul considers himself to be in control of his life. But since he does not have any actual controlling potency, his situation is contradictory and not at all pleasing. As all of one's material possessions are taken away by time, one becomes filled with lamentation. All in all, material life is truly abominable. And it is only because of dense illusion that we accept it as satisfactory. Very powerful. Hard-hitting purport there. So, it's actually abominable, but we accept it as satisfactory. Old age, all these things that take away all of our assets. There's the collection of quotes here by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati called Amrit Vani. And they've been collected into a chapter here called Dependence and Independence. So we've been speaking almost an hour on this topic, and you may want to exercise your independence and get up and go. Because you're tired of hearing about all this. But I'm going to interfere with your independence and force you to stay here and be dependent on hearing a little more of these quotations from the great acharyas. Because by hearing, we can get some impression. Just like we may be sick and then we take some medicine or maybe some vitamins, and every time we take that vitamin, a little bit sticks in the body and it starts to assist the body and the cells in performing their functions. Like we may go to a doctor and he analyzes you're deficient in iron. You have anemia and you're not producing enough red blood cells, so you should take some of these vitamins or iron tablets. And so you start taking them, then you feel more oxygen. It actually works on your cells and you start to feel more energy and more blood is being produced. So day by day as you take the medicine, you get some result, get some impression, get some health. So the more we hear, it creates some impression, some samskara, bhakti samskara. Then our thinking, it's called manovritti, our thought waves, manovritti. Our thought waves can only move along the lines of our exposure. They say a man is judged by his association. So if we always associate with tamasic people, then our manovritti, our thought waves, will be tamasic. We always read tamasic literature, then our manovritti, the ways of thought, will always move in a tamasic way, an ignorant way. So by exposing ourselves to higher concepts or transcendental knowledge, then our mind can start thinking in this direction, our manovritti. It's called manovritti, the ways of thought, the thought waves, that we say thought patterns. So first we hear, and then we consider and contemplate, then we accept. Or we reject. If we accept, then we have to respond to that acceptance by possibly changing the course, our course, or reevaluating our course. This is the value of receiving knowledge. Now, this is an appropriate question in terms of what we were just discussing. The question is, does the Supreme Lord interfere with the living entity's independence? I was just saying how I'm interfering with your independent choice. Siddhanta Saraswati said, the living entities are fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Conscious Lord. The qualities found in the vast ocean are also found in a single drop of ocean water, but in minute quantity. Thus the Lord is supremely independent, and the minute spirit souls possess minute independence. The living entities are not created, but they're eternal. Living entities are not products of matter, but they are spiritual, conscious beings. The living entities' independence is not imposed upon them, but it is their natural constitution. It is by misuse of this constitutional independence that the living entities suffer. For example, we have independence. We're living in this Delhi, and we know there's some laws of this society. And we have independence. We can choose to follow the law or go against the law. We know there's certain traffic laws that you can't drive your car on the sidewalk. Everyone pretty much knows that. So you decide one day, oh, there's too much traffic. You look this way, that way. I don't see any police. And you go up on the sidewalk. And you're deliberately independently acting, and you know it's wrong, and you know you may get punished, but you made the choice. You had independence. Independence to stay on the proper road, lawful road, or to go on the sidewalk. You independently chose, no one forced you to, It was not forced upon you. It was your independent choice. You pulled your car up on the sidewalk, you started driving down the sidewalk. And once you get over the bridge, on the other side of the sidewalk, there was a police car. And he pulled you over and gave you a big ticket. So then you realize, oh, that was a bad choice. I used my independence, but I got in trouble. So the misuse of our constitutional independence, living entities suffer. The Supreme Lord does not interfere with any entity's independence because he does not kill the living entity's spiritual characteristics. The Lord is an ocean of mercy. That is why he informs the living entities how to properly use or misuse their independence. Only those who hear his instructions from the scriptures and worship him, thus properly using their independence, attain perfection. So the Lord says, okay, you're living here in this world and I'll give you all facility to live and make arrangements for you to fulfill your desires. But if you really want to be happy, you should come to me, come to the spiritual world. And here's how you do it. Here's the scriptures, here's the path of yoga, sadhana, gyan, karma, etc. Follow these paths and you can attain perfection. But it's up to you. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives Arjuna so many instructions. Then he asks Arjuna, have you heard everything I told you? Have you heard all my teachings? Now, you deliberate fully. Then he says, hearing, then deliberation. Shravanam, then manana. Manana means deliberation, contemplation. Now, Arjuna, you've heard everything. I've talked to you about karma yoga and jnana yoga and mysticism and bhakti yoga. I talked to you about varna and ashram, ashram varna and all these different duties. Ashram dharma, varna dharma. Now, you deliberate fully on everything I said and you do what you want to do. So then Arjuna, he thought about it for some time and he said, Nimitta matram. He said, I want to be an instrument of your will. I thought about everything you said and I've come to a conclusion. I'm independently choosing. I'm making a choice here with my independence. I want you. I want to follow you. I will be an instrument in your hands. I will cooperate with you. I will submit to you and I will surrender to you and do whatever you wish. Because I have understood rationally, logically, intellectually, emotionally, independently, and individually, that's the best course of action for me to follow, is to follow your footsteps, O Bhagavan, O Saketi. So, that's one quote, that the Lord doesn't interfere because, like we say, love is not force, love is voluntary. You can't force someone, love me. You want to love them, you love them. If you don't, you don't. So the relationship of the jiva with God, or Bhagavan, Vishnu, or Krishna, is based on love. It's based on free will, free choice, independence. You want to love, Krishna would like to receive our love. I mean, he's always giving us his love. If he withdraws his love, if God withdraws his loving affection and attention for 1 second, we're dead. As soon as he stops the heartbeat, then we're finished. You can put some electric jolt on the chest to make the body jump off the bed. It doesn't always work. It doesn't come back. That's up to him. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. So this question is asked, what is actual independence? The desire to become independent in this material world means to become the servant of others. That's a very interesting point. Usually you think if someone's independent, then they don't serve anyone. They're the master. But if you want to be independent, I don't want to depend on God. I don't want to serve God. I want to be an independent ruler, controller, master, lord of this material world. But as soon as you take that course of wanting to be independent in the material world, then you become a servant of others. I'm going to be the independent ruler of India. So then what do you have to do? You have to serve the people and get their votes. You have to run all around India and spend millions and millions of dollars on your campaign to convince people to give your vote. And the only way you convince them is by promising them to serve. Folding your hands in the poster. You stand there with your hands folded very nicely. Oh, please give me your vote. I'll serve you nicely. I'll be your dasi, I'll be your kinkar. And as soon as you get elected, you rip them off maximum. Yeah. Go for the Bofors. Bofors is some scam.
Yeah.
So I'm saying go for means go for it. Go for it.
Go.
So I'm making a joke. So once they get elected, they go for it. Go for it, vote for it. They go for all the taxpayers' money and get as many crores as they can and then retire. But they don't retire, they get knocked off or forced to retire. Material independence is simply a covered form of dependence. Complete independence is obtained by becoming dependent on the Lord. That's an interesting point. By becoming a slave, you become the master. Materially, how's that? That doesn't make sense. It's a paradox. You tell someone, yes, you become my slave, you'll become the master. And that's what we find when we study the spiritual world. It says that, what does it say? It says Krishna's controlled by love. By love. God is controlled, we say God is love. God is controlled by love. And love is an attribute of a living being, not of a stone. So devotees are living beings, living conscious units. So the greatest of all the devotees is Srimati Radhika. And she has the greatest love, and the greatest expression of love, her form, her speech, her actions, her heart, her dealings, her service, is the most satisfying and complete form of love. And that love totally controls Krishna. So God is controlled by love. The supreme independent controller becomes controlled by the finite. The infinite, the infinite Lord becomes controlled by the finite jiva. The vibhu Chaitanya becomes controlled by Anu Chaitanya. We're Anu Chaitanya. Atomic consciousness. Atomic particle of consciousness controls the Vibhu Chaitanya, the big consciousness, the all-pervading supreme consciousness. How so? By love. And that love is expressed by surrender. But that surrender is so attractive to the Lord and so overwhelming that it overwhelms the Lord when we surrender unto Him in love. So complete independence. What does that mean, complete independence? When the jiva surrenders to God and becomes dependent on Him, then he becomes independent of the modes of nature, becomes independent of the society, becomes independent of Yamaraj, becomes independent of all the demigods, becomes independent of the bodily dictates, becomes independent of the cycle of birth and death, so that's independence. Independence means you're not controlled. You're not controlled by death. You're not controlled by time. You're not controlled by the demigods. You're not controlled by the material body. You're not controlled by eating, sleeping, anything. Because you're under the boss. You're with God. So complete independence is obtained by becoming dependent on the Lord, who is full of eternality, knowledge, and bliss, and desiring only to serve Him. As long as the living entities hold the rope of the Lord's mercy, they are known as His servants. Those who think themselves self-dependent or independent should know that they're actually dependent on others. Only those who depend on the Supreme Lord are truly independent. When we attain actual independence, then the conception that we are eternally dependent on Sri Hari becomes prominent. In other words, when we're under the modes of nature, when our thinking, when our actions, our thinking, our feeling, our willing, these are the mental attributes. The mind, man, as attributes or actions, thinking about something, then feelings about that something, then willing, icha. Thinking is, we can just say, you know, shochan, and feeling is bhava, and then action is kriya or icha. So thinking, feeling, willing, these are the mental actions or mental activities. So there, if we're in a mode of ignorance, then we think ignorantly, and we desire ignorantly, we act ignorantly. If we're in the mode of passion, we think passionately and feel passionately and act passionately. If we're in the mode of goodness, so when we surrender to Krishna, we become transcendental. Saganat samatityaitan brahma bhuvaya kalpate. It says in Gita that you rise above. So when you rise above the modes of nature, then you're independent. You're not controlled by passion, goodness, or ignorance. And that's what he's saying. And when you actually get transcendental knowledge, it's called enlightenment. Enlightenment means to see beyond the covering of the modes of nature, to see beyond ignorance to passion, to see beyond passion to goodness, and see beyond goodness to shuddha sattva, or pure goodness, means to see transcendence. Beyond the body, there's the senses. Higher than the senses is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. Higher the intelligence is the ego, or the upadhi, the identity. And higher the identity is the atma, the conscious experiencer, the conscious witness of reality, the conscious enjoyers, the ones actually controlling and residing in the body, the self. So when we rise above the modes of nature, then we'll actually realize, actually, I'm not independent. I'm dependent on God. I'm actually dependent on God and His and the demigods every step of the game. Every step, every breath I take, every action I make, every thought I think, every movement I make, it's all I'm dependent on God. That's what it's saying. We attain actual independence. When we attain independence from the modes of nature, as I explained, then the conception or idea that we are eternally dependent on Sri Hari becomes prominent. Because as long as we're under passion, we think we're the doer, and we think we're independent. As long as we're under the mode of goodness, we think we're the doer, and we're independent. As long as we're under the mode of ignorance, we think we're the doer, independent. So when you get free from the modes, then you get real knowledge. It's called enlightenment. You get real vision. Then you can see, wait a minute, I'm not independent, I'm dependent. And I was dependent on all these modes. And I was controlled by all these modes. But now I've transcended them. Any object that is a complete whole is transcendental. Service to or dependence on that transcendental absolute truth, Sri Hari, is actual joyful independence. Otherwise, the show of independence, while identifying oneself as the doer or master, brings only distress. It is nothing but subordination under Maya. So if we don't declare our dependence on Krishna or God, then our false expression of independence means that we're totally subordinated and subjugated by Maya, by the illusory energy, which has three features of the three modes of nature. We're controlled at every step of the way. And then the illusion is we think we're independent. Okay, there's another nice quote. This is a question that's asked. Why are we not able to depend fully on the Supreme Lord? It's quite appropriate. Siddhanta Saraswati says, we are infinitesimal spirit souls, and it is our nature to remain surrendered and to take shelter of the infinite soul. Because we listen with so much dependence to mundane discussions and solutions in the external world, we are unable to depend on the Supreme Lord. In other words, he's saying that we become brainwashed by the advertising, by the education, by the hearing, whatever we're hearing from materialistic people. They take us away from God. There is no God, and everything came from chemicals, and all this kind of propaganda that we hear, it takes us away. Only a person who desires nothing from this world and does not depend on objects visible in this world can faithfully depend on the Lord. By hearing enlightening Harikatha from the mouths of ever-lively saintly persons and the scriptures, we can come to completely depend on the Supreme Lord. So the idea is that we have to change our source of hearing. If we're only hearing from material people, then we'll only get material concepts. So we have to hear from the material books we always read throughout our life. In school, we read all these materialistic books written by materialistic people who are falsely thinking themselves independent of God, or even they decried the existence of God. So then we only have one track mind, one way of thinking, their way. So we should get exposure to the other line of thought, God-centered thought, God-centered ideas. So that comes from sadhus and shastra. Do living entities have independent will? The living entity is infinitesimal, and because of his minute size, can be covered by powerful Maya. When living entities fall under Maya's control, they become averse to and indifferent to the Lord's service. The living entities are minutely independent. With their independent will, they can remain either devotees or become non-devotees. Non-devotional existence is called a conditional state and is based on aversion to the Lord's service. Such entities who choose this path develop the desire to become God. An uncontrollable endeavor to become the master of Maya is found in such entities. Only by the pure devotee's mercy does the propensity for serving the Lord awaken in the living entities, and thus they regain their original position. Properly situated, they no longer remain conditioned. Desire for material enjoyment covers the spiritual consciousness of the living entities and throws them into the material atmosphere. Sometimes they say that Maya has two potencies, the throwing covering potency and throwing potency. But the Maya comes into action. The Maya acts based on our desire. If we desire Krishna, then Yoga Maya acts. If we desire to avoid Krishna, then Mahamaya acts. So basically, we were controlled either by Mahamaya, Krishna's external energy, or Yoga Maya, his internal energy. We're always controlled. But under the Mahamaya, we think we're controlled by Maya, but we think we're independent. And under Yoga Maya, we're controlled by Yoga Maya or by Krishna, and we realize we're dependent. And we realize that we're under his control, and we make that choice willfully. So the desire for material enjoyment covers the spiritual consciousness. By the devotee's mercy, the living entity's conditioned state, based on their independent will, is easily destroyed. Subordination to the devotees is the proper utilization of independence, and desire for sense gratification is the misuse of independence. I think that is maybe two more. How did the dependent, this is interesting, how did the dependent, independent souls receive their independence? You got that?
How did the dependent, independent souls
receive their independence? We are parts and parcels of the fully independent personality of Godhead. And therefore, God's qualities are present in us in minute quantity. Krishna is fully independent, therefore we also possess minute independence. In our independence, there are two kinds of aversion to the Lord. Aversion in the form of desire for material enjoyment. That means we're averse to the Lord because we want to have bhog. That's karmis. Or aversion in the form of renunciation of material enjoyment. Oh, I renounce everything. I don't want to enjoy. I renounce. I'm a tyagi or a jnani. So they're both way. You're renouncing the world, which is not yours to renounce, or you're enjoying the world, which is not ours to enjoy. You renounce the world. It's his world. It's God's world. We should offer it to him. And that's the proper utilization of it, not to enjoy it. So we can either enjoy the world or renounce the world. We engage the world and engage ourselves in his service. So, for the independent souls, there are only two ways open: to walk the path of material enjoyment or to walk the path of devotional service. No one can remain neutral. Everyone must choose one of these two paths. By constantly worshipping the Lord with love and devotion, one is not covered and thrown by the Lord's illusory energy. So the source, how we get covered by Maya and thrown into different species of life, is due to our desire. Maya acts on the basis of our desire. We desire material enjoyment, then we end up. But the worship should be constant. If there is even a slight interruption in our attention, Maya will take advantage of the situation and cause us trouble. So if we're serving Krishna and we become inattentive, and then Maya will sneak in and say, you're not paying attention to serving Krishna? Okay, serve me. It's like you can imagine somebody is married, and then they're living at home, and then their wife goes somewhere to their mother's house. And so they're a chaste husband serving their wife, and then some prostitute comes to the house, knocks on the door, and says, "Oh, where's your wife? Oh, she's not here. Oh, she's not here. Oh, why don't you come? Why don't you enjoy with me? Why don't you serve me?" Say, "Hey, what are you doing?" So Maya's like that. Oh, you're inattentive. You're not, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. Idle mind is a devil's workshop. You don't have something good on your mind, then let me put something bad on your mind. You don't have Krishna's service on your mind, or his pleasure, or his happiness? Okay, then I'll give you something to think about. I'll give you something to do. And Maya will engage us in some nonsense. So the spirit soul has a very valuable jewel called independence. But there is a difference between the living entity's independence and the independence of God. The Supreme Lord is fully independent, while the living entity's independence always depends on his will. The living entities can either use their independence properly or they can misuse it. If the Lord forced the living entities to act against their own free will, then their spiritual nature will be destroyed. As our nature is independence. That is why the Lord never interferes with the independence, but rather tries to revive their natural propensities towards service. So the Lord doesn't come into this world to show His lila or to give His teachings to force us to give up our independence. He shows the lila and He gives the teaching so we may come to understand, oh, this is good for me. I should do this. I should serve the Lord. People are doing that. People are serving the Lord. People are submitting to the Lord and declaring their dependence on the Lord, and they seem to be quite happy about it. They seem to be quite satisfied in that line of thought, in that line of action. Maybe I should do the same. Because actually our natural propensity, in our natural state, in our pure state, our natural pure state of consciousness or mind, is to serve God. Just like if someone gets temporarily deranged or gets some mental disease, they may start acting violently against their parents. Say, I don't care for him anymore. Just shut up. I'll do whatever I want. And they become like a little crazy sometimes. Maybe some ghost or maybe some tantric or just, it's called growing up. It's also there. The rebellion. Everybody rebels. This is a universal feature. As soon as you become a teenager, then you rebel against authority. And the immediate authority is your mother and father. That usually happens everywhere. Your mother and father went through it, and then they eventually submitted, I suppose. And now you're a teenager, so you're going through it, I suppose. I went through it also. But this is not our natural propensity to rebel. Our natural propensity is to cooperate. So the Lord, He simply tries to create a situation by showing His beautiful, attractive leelas to attract us, and by teaching us, giving us very clear and complete knowledge by which, if we study, we may understand, well, this sounds quite correct, what Krishna is saying here in Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. And I think I should change my course of action and start serving Him rather than rebelling against Him. I should cooperate with Him rather than go against Him. Then we do that, we change our course of life from serving Maya to serving Krishna. We find it to be very successful. We find it to be a better proposition than serving Maya. Because serve we must. Either we serve Maya or Krishna. So this is the conclusion of our discussion on independence. So this is Independence Day, so we want to, as surrendered devotees, we want to declare our dependence on Krishna. We want to accept Krishna as our maintainer, Gopchitve Varanantata. It's one of the six symptoms of surrender, is to accept Krishna as my maintainer, my protector. All I have to do in life is worship Krishna, Ananya Bhakti, with undivided devotion. I don't have to worship anyone else, any god, any semi-god, any demigod, anyone else. If I simply devote all my energy and attention and feelings and actions and service and activity towards the pleasure of Krishna, then everything will be successful, everything will be perfect. I'll receive everything I require. All my fulfillments will be, I'll be fulfilled in all my aspirations, and I'll attain all perfection in my material life and my spiritual life. So this is the absolute dependence of the surrendered soul on Krishna, Sharanagati. Sharanapati or Sharanagati. So this is the day that India became independent from Britain. Now that they became independent from Britain, they're dependent on all the dacoit leaders. There used to be one king running India. The King of England was the emperor. He was running England. Now every village has a king. And every king is taxing the people. Every DM, every CMDM, SGM, and they're just taxing and harassing the people unlimitedly. It used to be one king for the whole country. Now everywhere you turn, someone is taking some toll tax, road tax, this tax, that tax. Everywhere they're simply ripping everyone off. So this is our so-called independence. Get independent from one king and become dependent on 1,000 kings. Pay taxes to one king, now pay taxes to 1,000 kings. So who can say? But either way, it's Maya, whether we're dependent on the King of England or the many kings, the many kings of the present day India, demon crazy politicians. Prabhupada said democracy means, when someone said that most of the countries of the world are going towards democracy, they're abolishing the republics, they're taking down the Tsar, taking down the kings, breaking up the kingdoms, and replacing them with democracies. Prabhupada says, democracy is like demon crazy. Demo, demon. Krasi, crazy. Demon crazy. Simply the group of foolish people get together and elect the biggest fool. And people are all cheaters themselves and they don't have any proper higher ideas. So then they elect some other cheater and then they become so surprised when he cheats them. But if 100 cheaters get together and say, okay, let's elect a leader. So they're all going to elect the biggest cheater amongst them. So they all get together and they vote for Lalu Prasad. Because he's a big cheat. They're all cheaters and they think, oh, he's a good cheater. Cheaters and the cheated. So the real success, the real solution is to declare our dependence on God by chanting His name and serving Him and see what kind of happy, joyful life that creates for us. Is there any questions about this? Discussion about independence. Some young students in the audience.
Mm-hmm. I said that once we are dependent on God, then we are not dependent on even the body or sleep or anything.
Yes.
We understand that, but once we have like a spiritual body, what kind of like doesn't need any food or any sleep or anything? I mean, maybe it's not directly related.
Yeah, well, as I said, everyone's dependent either on God's external energy or His internal energy. Everything is supported by the Lord, like pearls on a string. He's the support of everything. The material world is supported on Him. Spiritual world is supported based on Him. Sandini Shakti is the basis, the existence potency. Everything is floating on the consciousness of the Lord. So in this spiritual body, there's no inside, no outside. It's all consciousness. And the whole existence of the spiritual body is for the pleasure of the Lord. So there's no laws of nature acting on the spiritual body. There's no growth, no old age, no disease, no death. It's the eternal body, Satchidananda. So there's no need. There's no need imposed. Material body has so many needs, so many wants. It's not complete. Material body is incomplete by itself. It always requires input of food and sleep and water. But the spiritual body is complete. It's Satchidananda. It's eternal. Eternally conscious and full of bliss and full of knowledge. There's no incompleteness. Om Purnamidam Purnamidam. Krishna is complete and so many complete units are emanating from Him. So when we come to the spiritual realm, then everyone is Atmaram, everyone is satisfied, everyone is complete, everyone is fulfilled. And so the only activity there is service. Everyone just engaged in service. No one is engaged in work to get some food to maintain their body. There's no work there, there's no maintenance there. No one sleeps, eats, mates, defends. There's no ahara, nidra, maitan, bhayam there. It's just a land of love, a land of service, and all kinds of leela and playing. So they eat there, but they eat for leela, not because they have to. Our eating is not leela. We may think of it like that. My Bhog Leela, my Cheyenne Leela, after Bhog. But there everything, there's no necessity. Love is a necessity. Service is a necessity. Pleasure. The only necessity is to give pleasure to Krishna. So everyone is a pleasure-giving unit. Everyone, the trees are giving pleasure to Krishna, the birds, the land, the gopis, the gopas, the mothers, the fathers, the friends, the lovers. They're all units of pleasure, conscious beings. It's not that, oh, I'm really hungry, you have something to eat? Or I'm really thirsty, do you have any drinks? You have something to drink? They're not compelled or forced by the modes of nature. There's no deficiency. Everything is complete. Purnamadam. Purna. Purna Bhagavan and Purna, the Sevata, Sevite, is also complete. Lord is complete. We say the Lord is complete and full in Himself. He doesn't need anything from any outside source. So the liberated soul in the spiritual body is complete in Himself. He doesn't need anything from any outside source. He just engages in loving Krishna and serving Krishna throughout the day and night in all different services. And Krishna, after he's rasa dancing and bathing in Yamuna, water splashing and taking a picnic, having a picnic, then he goes to what looks like sleep. He relaxes with Radharani and Kunja for an hour, some few hours, and maybe it looks like they sleep. And then the mantris and sakis, they go outside on the platform and they lie down for 1 hour. And it says that they go to sleep. While they're sleeping, there's something called swapna vilas. So it's not unconsciousness. Swapna means dream and vilas means pastimes. So even when they're dreaming, they're having pastimes. So, if the need be, they can stay up and dance in a rasa dance for millions of nights. Because it says that the Maharasa dance lasts for the day of Brahma. Day of Brahma is millions of nights. Thousands and thousands of nights. So, no, they didn't sleep for a few million nights. Because they were too busy dancing that time. Maharas. So if they sleep, or sometimes they, Radharani cooks for Krishna, and then she serves him. It's just because they do things there. They have like human-like activities. But they're not done out of necessity or emptiness or lacking. There's nothing lacking. It's all for Leela. Bhojan Leela, Banbihar, Bhojan Leela, it's all Leela. And sometimes, because everything's transcendental, everything's spiritual. So then devotees would ask Prabhupada, well, people eat in the spiritual world? Prabhupada said, yes. He said, well, after they eat the food, then what happens then? Where does the food go? Because here, after you eat food, then you know it goes through the body and it's processed and then it comes out, you know, the backside. So then you try to be clever. Is it Prabhupada when they eat in the spiritual world? Yes, they eat prasanna. But everything always exists. It exists eternally. So if you eat a pakora, then you chew up that pakora. But then a pakora comes back again? Or I know, it always exists. Or where does it go after you eat it? You swallow it, then where does it go? The Prabhupada said, you'll find out when you get there. So... some things you can't understand with our material mind. When the people first went in space and everything was floating around in the space capsule, no one can understand. There's something called weightlessness. There's some place where there's no gravity. If you go up there in space, everything just floats. If you don't tie it down, it floats. Tape players, it floats. And a spacecraft, everything is... You go to put toothpaste on your... You have a toothbrush and you put the toothpaste on, toothpaste floats off. There's no gravity. So it sounds like phantasmagoria. It sounds like fairy tale, isn't it? But then you say, oh no, there's no gravitational force and this and that. So when we hear about the spiritual dimension, then we have to accept that there's something inconceivable there. But nothing is, there's no work, there's no force, there's no lack, there's no insufficiency. Everything's complete.